Well, good morning. I'm absolutely delighted to be a part of this panel. I was riveted by your talk, frankly, and very not familiar with your work, Brian and Adrian, and just absolutely really delighted and thrilled to be following Val and Alex in this very important work related to racial and ethnic disparities. I'm going to be talking this morning about reproductive cancer treatment hospitalizations for American women with intellectual and developmental disabilities. I want to acknowledge my co-authors on this. Esther Sohn started this work with us when she was a postdoc and is now an assistant prof at CUNY, and Leah Igdalsky is part of my team at the Lurie Institute at Brandeis. And I'd also just like to acknowledge the funder on this. This is part of work that we're doing in collaboration with the RRTC on health at the University of Illinois at Chicago, led by Tamar Heller and my colleague Kelly at the end. I'm thinking last time Kelly and I presented together, we had just earned our doctorates from UIC. So it's just very nice to be here this morning. And this work is an extension of a longstanding interest that we've had related to the reproductive health of women with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And I have no, sadly, we don't get paid, no financial disclosures whatsoever, nor do my colleagues. So just in terms of what I'm going to be covering this morning, a bit of background on cancer among folks with intellectual and developmental disabilities, and specifically looking at reproductive cancer, risk and protective factors, and then a consideration of our study. Most importantly, I'm going to leave you with a number of unanswered questions based on the nature of this work that we're doing. So the truth is we know from a lot of research, certainly cancer is an important public health problem in the United States. CDC reports that it's the second leading cause of death for both men and women. We expect that the incidence of all cancers is increasing for people with intellectual and developmental disabilities because their life expectancy has increased so dramatically over the last few decades. And certainly that is leading them to greater exposure. We don't know much, frankly, about cancer in people with intellectual. They're having a lot more fun next door. I'm just gonna say, I won't be offended. Go next door. Honestly, it's okay. Wow, okay, y'all are boring. We really know very, very little about cancer among people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. There was an seriously, I'm encouraging you. I will not have you rolling on the floor, sadly. There was an international symposium in Montpellier in France 2 years ago that convened everyone working in cancer, most of the folks working in cancer, and people with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And after a two-day conference, what we really concluded was we know almost nothing. And so some of this work we've undertaken to try to just understand the contours of what is happening. We believe that based on, again, very limited evidence, much of which has come from France, is that men with intellectual and developmental disabilities appear to be at increased risk of leukemia, brain, and stomach cancers, and they appear to be at reduced risk of prostate cancers. Why this looks different epidemiologically, we certainly are not at the stage of having a good sense of that. For women with intellectual disabilities, we also have seen some reports of this increased risk of leukemia, corpus uteri, and colorectal cancers. Again, the reasons for that are unclear. There are some protective factors when we think about the risks that women with intellectual and developmental disabilities are at with regard to reproductive cancer specifically. First is that some women with intellectual disabilities have low estrogen levels, which will reduce cervical cancer risk as well as some types of breast cancer. Some women with intellectual disabilities are experiencing earlier onset of menopause, which also is associated with a decreased risk of breast cancer. Additional protective factors is that for women who are sexually abstinent, The risk of cervical cancer, of course, is reduced. Sexual intercourse heightens the risk, as I think everyone knows at this point, for HPV. And then breast cancer is reduced for women with Down syndrome. That's, again, work out of France that Daniel Sayer and his team have done. However, we also know that there are some important risk factors for women. The high rates of obesity that have been documented for this population, and I think that Kelly is going to talk about in more detail, nulliparity or the situation of not giving birth increases particularly the risk of breast cancer. And then the astronomically high rates of sexual assault for women with intellectual disabilities, we hypothesize that that certainly increases the risk of cervical cancer. And so what we know is also that women with intellectual and developmental disabilities are much less likely than other women to have received the Pap test, which of course is a screening procedure to detect cervical cancer, and they are much less likely to receive mammography. And quite a number of researchers have come to this conclusion using a variety of data sets. Susan Haverkamp's work has shown this in North Carolina. We've looked at it nationally, and the results are really robust across data sets and data sources. What's particularly worrisome, of course, with regard to these screenings is that we know for the population of non-disabled women that access to screening saves lives, and so ongoing problems with these preventive screenings is really problematic. We know almost nothing about cancer hospitalization among women with intellectual disabilities. Most research, including ours, has focused on screening instead. And some, particularly out of the UK, has explored how you should talk to folks with intellectual disabilities when they receive a diagnosis. But in terms of understanding the costs of cancer hospitalizations or what that looks like, there's really no research on that. Okay, and so our work is really exploratory in this. We were interested in understanding the relative prevalence of reproductive cancer hospitalization and identifying the characteristics of women who were receiving this treatment. The data were drawn from the 2009 wave of the HCUP, which is the Healthcare Cost and Utilization Project. This is a nationally representative sample. It's an exceptionally robust data set. You can see from the sample of women with intellectual disabilities, almost 1,300 are included here. And this is a data set that we've just begun analyzing in the last year and a half, and we think it really has important potential. And listening to you, Brian, talk about the kinds of work you're doing, you gave me some ideas for some other things that we're going to hope to achieve with it. The challenges are that, and Brian alluded to this in his talk as well, we are using ICD-9 codes to identify women with intellectual and developmental disabilities. And as you heard Brian talk about a process of doing that, their process is frankly much more robust than ours. If a woman shows up in a hospitalization discharge record with an ICD-9 code related to one of the intellectual and developmental disabilities, she's in our sample. Whereas you heard from him, if I heard you correctly, that you had three indicators actually that women had, or men and women had to show up with. So ours is less robust. There's a great literature out there on the challenges of using ICD-9 codes. And so we know that this is problematic. Our argument is that since there's so little information out there, we think it was worthwhile anyway. And so we compared hospitalizations for women who did and did not have intellectual disabilities, controlling for the typical demographic characteristics, age, race, ethnicity, insurance payer. We don't have an actual measure of income for the women, so we used the median household income in the patient's zip code, the type of cancer, that was not a covariate actually, that's an outcome, length of stay, and then death in the hospital and total hospital charges. Death in the hospital was an outcome also, sorry. Okay, so this just gives you a sense of the how the sample compares on the sociodemographic characteristics. There were no racial or ethnic differences between the groups of women who did and did not have intellectual and developmental disabilities. However, the women with intellectual disabilities were quite a bit younger than the other women, much more likely to have public health insurance, whether Medicare or Medicaid, much more likely also to live in a zip code with relatively low median income. And as you can see, they had significantly longer average hospital stays, which, as Brian mentioned, of course, translates directly into elevated costs of care. So this graph gives you a sense of the percent of women who were being hospitalized by the type of cancer, and the asterisks indicate whether or not there were statistically significant differences between women with and without intellectual disabilities. So about a third of the women were in the hospital for having breast cancer, and then the other cancers together are significantly smaller. So no differences in terms of whether women were hospitalized for breast cancer, ovarian, other genital cancers. Those rates were the same and not statistically significant, even after controlling for all of the socio-demographic characteristics. Women with intellectual disabilities were actually less likely than other women to be in hospital for cervical cancer, and we thought that was a very interesting finding because we actually expect an elevated risk of cervical cancer related to the high rates of sexual assault, and I'm happy to talk a bit more about that. But women with intellectual disabilities who are in this case represented in the dark blue are more likely to have been hospitalized for uterine cancer. I don't even know what the last one is, I'm sorry. So we'll just skip quickly over that. Okay. So what we know about these women, I mean, this is obviously exploratory, and we have many more unanswered questions than what we've actually answered here. But we do know that the women are significantly younger. They're more likely to have public insurance, and again, the length of stay is translating into higher costs. The women with intellectual disabilities, not surprisingly, were much more likely to live in low-income areas. Consistent with prior research, there's one other study out on this, uterine cancer is more prevalent for women with intellectual disabilities, and cervical cancer is less prevalent. One of the concerns that we have, frankly, with this is we're really not clear on the extent to which women are being hospitalized accurately and appropriately for these cancers, and that's a major limitation of these kinds of data. And in other work that we've done, particularly in North Carolina, we know that access to care and receipt of appropriate care is a major problem for these women. So I don't think we can take this as evidence of the prevalence of these cancers. It's actually, you know, the prevalence of the hospitalizations that include this diagnosis. And I'm frankly very worried about the cervical cancer rates. Some of the women we worked with in North Carolina when we were on the ground there, they were never diagnosed, and they, it just was a really terrible situation. And access and appropriate care is a remaining frontier for us in this field. So the limitations, the HCUP data are, the unit of analysis is actually the hospital discharge record, which is a major problem because we're not looking at person-level information. So it is possible that if a woman is hospitalized twice in the same year, that she actually is in the sample twice. And this introduces bias. We're not clear which direction, but it certainly is a limitation. And as I mentioned earlier, the reliance on ICD-9 codes is problematic. We assume that women with intellectual disabilities are absolutely under-ascertained here, and we certainly need to do more work to find better ways to reach and correctly identify these women. The challenge that we face in all of the NetLarge national data sets, as Adrian and Brian were mentioning, is that the measures of disability are really problematic across the board, whether we're talking about the MEPS or the NHIS, and it's just really a challenge. So certainly we think that we've raised more questions here than we have answers, and we don't know why any of these findings look the way we do, frankly. We certainly would like to understand why women are significantly younger than when they're being hospitalized, it's just utterly unclear why that might be the case. most likely. Oh, and they are significantly less likely. So when we looked at what was the reason for diagnosis, and I didn't present these findings numerically, but the concern, of course, is that women with intellectual disabilities are just overall much less likely as a percent to be hospitalized with this as a primary diagnosis compared to other women. And we certainly need future research to look at the prevalence of uterine cancer and why it's higher for women with intellectual disabilities. Is this a robust finding or is it artifactual from the data? And the longer stays make some sense when you think about the vulnerability of this population, high comorbidities, you know, with diabetes, hypertension, obesity, but it's unclear, you know, the extent to which this reflects appropriate treatment, or does this mean that women should be getting better care, you know, in ambulatory settings to prevent hospitalization? Again, we're raising more questions than we are answering. Now, there's a lovely slide for you to memorize. And I'd just like to, again, thank my colleagues and the funder, the UIC Center. And our website is posted here, and I thank you so much for your time and interest.